Hey, what's good, everyone? This is Rich.
And Wim.
And you're listening to the Paychecks and Balances Q&A episode, where we answer your questions on work and money with the hopes you don't leave saying, what the hell was that?
Speaking of which, and if you enjoyed today's episode, I've been enjoying the show. Don't forget to share it with your network, which we've made super easy to do so on Twitter, at least. Go to paychecksandbalances.com/tweet. All you have to do is hit send.
Nicely done. You know why I'm saying that.
Thank you.
So a listener suggests, so this is basically, it's kind of like a half segment, semi-segment, where we get people who have great experiences with apps, services that they found, and they tell us about it so that we can then come back and tell you all about it. And so we got this one from Aisha. I'm going with that since that's typically how it's pronounced. If it's pronounced differently, email us and I will apologize via email.
I was wondering what pronunciation you were going to go with. I'm sure you butchered it given our history and trends, but well done.
I'm pretty sure it's Aisha. So she says, love your podcast. I've been following your work since SBM, which was single black male relationship blog that we both had a previous writing relationship with, and maybe longer for Rich with his relationship blog, which was, I guess, another site. You're doing good work. Anyway, I'm behind like 1 week, but a really good app, far better than Mint, in my opinion, is Level. You link your account, tap transactions that are bills, and it will automatically track your spending and let you know when you're overspending. It will also let you know how much to save a month, set up personal trackers for specific types of purchases like coffee or vacation, and it will automatically track the transactions as you go. It was helpful when I needed to figure out where to cut back in order to pay off a credit card. Really intuitive and simple. One last thing. Are you guys ever going to talk about investing as a means to saving, accumulating wealth for retirement, or anything really?
I am surprised, or maybe I shouldn't be, how many apps are in this lane. So, yeah. And I missed one. We actually talked about one from a website. I do want to cover all the ones that we've hit before. So appreciate you for introducing us to Level. I actually hadn't heard of. I use Mint. We talked about Every Dollar, and there was a review that we read between Every Dollar and You Need a Budget, in which the reviewer, I believe, recommended You Need a Budget over Every Dollar only for use of application. And I say all that because, and I would, you know, encourage listeners to have a budget. I mean, I'm not really particular on which app you use, but you do need a budget. It doesn't have to be You Need a Budget, though. you need to have a budget. Whether you know what? I think y'all get it. But my thing is, and I realize this lately, I have no less than 3, if not 4, financial management type apps on my phone.
Yeah, it's getting kind of crazy for me.
The most useful tool, and maybe I'm old, and I shared this on the Twitter. Wow, that sounded old. On the tweets and the most useful tool I have, I actually kind of bought on a whim, and it was a dry erase calendar, WHIM, from Target. And I track all my bills on there, my monthly bills. So I could just know where my money was going from month to month. That is the most useful and reliable tool I have. Like I dry erase it and then I fill it out for the first through the 31st. First of all, you see pretty quickly that 90% of your bills are stagnant. Pretty much they all show up at the same time. They all show up on the same date. There's like very few that fluctuate.
And yet I'm upset every month.
Yeah, it really drives home. And now, I mean, part of the exercise is that since I get paid once a month, I just pay all my bills on the second. And so that way I don't have to go through the whole mental exercise of thinking I have more money than I have, even though I'm tracking my money. And I actually read about this. Luckily, I'm not alone. In the study that we covered on the earlier episode this week, that is, they said that, I wish I had the exact stat, but basically a ridiculous amount of people underestimate how much debt they have. And it's like 150% lower than the credit card company's report. So when they ask people to self-report their debt, they underestimate their own debt by about 150%. And that's because they said most people don't know how much debt they have. They lose track of it. They're uncomfortable getting an actual accounting of it. Or they just don't even realize it. Because I think they were saying that the average American is paying $1,700 in interest a month. And that's for credit cards.
Wow.
So that doesn't even include, I think it was around $6,000 to $9,000 for all debt. So I think most people, and okay, you know what? I said I was going to story tell, so I'll be honest here. I'm paying $100 in interest on a card. And I didn't even realize it. Like, I knew I was paying interest on it. But one day I like really sat down and went to go look at the interest, because this was when I was going through the whole trifecta of moving all my cards over to 0% interest bearing avenues. Mm-hmm. And I was like, because I didn't pay attention. Like you just get into the habit of paying it. And as long as it didn't go up, I didn't really care about it. And it was one of those things where like, I think the initial offer expired and blah, 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 excuse. But what it boils down to is I didn't go back and check the interest that I was paying from month to month. And I was like, that's insane. I was throwing $100 away a month just because I was lazy. And we talked about that with fees. How,
in there.
You just have these reoccurring fees. You're like, oh, whatever, gym fee, magazine fee, you know, internet fee, you know, whatever. You don't pay attention. And they were like, you know, hundreds of dollars in fees that you don't even use, but it's just so convenient that you don't even look into it. And we talked about the listener shared with us where she just called her credit card company and asked for a lower interest rate, and it got lowered by like 9 points or boom, nine APR points. And I just think sometimes you have to take a step back and not let these tools give you, and I'm not saying that Aisha, I think it's a title.
Aisha, say it with some confidence, brother.
I think that's what we were going with. That's what I wasn't sure. But I'm not saying that she's one of them, but I have all these tools, or I have a tool that's equivalent, but they're only as useful as you make them. Yeah. And I don't want folks to download these tools and have the illusion of, well, I have a budgeting app on my phone, therefore now I have a budget. It's no good if you never open it. It's no good if you void it month to month. It's no good if you completely ignore all the tools and attributes and everything that is tracking. So yes, first step is doing it, but the next most important step is using it.
Yeah, I actually just uninstall like two financial apps from my phone because I was like, yo, I'm not using all these. I just need to streamline this down to like one or two that I'm really using. So I talked about Digit on last week's Paychecks and Balances episode. I think that was 15, and I'm still using that. So that's my primary savings app right now. But then there's other things people are writing in, talking to us about. And I'm like, I don't know if I want to introduce too many more things that are pulling money from my different accounts and too many more things that require me to enter all of the same information. And so, yes, I definitely think it's greater to simplify rather than try to feel like you need to be on every single app, super current on stuff. Like, I remember one time I saw an article and it was titled like 50 productivity apps to keep you going. And I was like, yo, if you have 50 productivity apps on your phone, you're probably not being productive at all.
You would be unproductive to download all 50.
Just think about all that time, especially if you're on like 3G in like the Everglades somewhere. But
so to get to, unless that was your transition to the actual other question,
I was just coming back to it.
Okay, cool.
No, you started. Go ahead, brother.
Investing. We did talk about it before, and I caveat or disclaimer this with that I am not a financial expert. My lane is debt and debt management. So right. I offer this as an opinion, but is informed by talking to CPAs and certified financial planners about this conversation. And essentially, without getting fancy, I just try to allocate 15%. It's a stretch goal right now because of some other things I'm trying to do. I moved it down
15%
to
15% for saving, right?
I'd say in totality 20%, but 15% specifically for retirement, which to me is an investment. So I was investing at one point 16% to various 457 in a plan that my work offered. And now I'm down, quote unquote, down to 10% because I moved 5% over to another avenue that I'm allocating that money to, and I might talk about on a future show. So I feel that for millennials and younger, striving for 15% is probably going to become the standard. I think it used to be 10%. But I think for us, given with the stagnating wages and all the other depressing things that I could go through on this show, but I won't, or maybe on another show, I will. I think 15% should be the stretch goal that you should be striving for. Now, some people are going to be saying, "What? I'm not going to give 50%. No, whatever. Whoever those excuse bearers are, you can work towards it. Like, I didn't start at 15%. I think when I originally started, it was like 8. And then when I got a raise, I'd move another 2, or when I got a promotion, I'd move another 2%. And then eventually I got to a point where I could allocate 15% towards a wealth or retirement account in this case. Did you have any, thoughts or advice on that?
Yeah. Well, the only thing I was going to say is the same thing. I am not a financial expert. In fact, I'm going through the journey right along with y'all. And what we'll do in the future is have guests on who can speak to some of these topics from a more expert perspective, versus us trying to fake the funk. That might work with relationship blogging, but we don't want people messing up their financial well-being by just throwing something out there, trying to sound like we know what we're talking about.
And what I also try to do is share helpful articles on that topic on Twitter, primarily at Pay Balances. And for example, I shared one. This will be the 24th, depending on when the show drops. But a 20-year-old could become a millionaire by age 65 by saving just $190 per month. And that comes from money.usnews.com. So I do try to share those sources. I try to talk to people who are informed on that. And as Rich alluded to, I think it'll be helpful for us to have people like that on the show. I do, however, think that debt management is in itself a part of an investment strategy plan.
Yeah.
And definitely, if I had to choose, because I did talk about this on another show, if you somebody said, should I pay off debt first or retirement? I was like, I think you should be putting your money towards retirement because you're always going to retirement. And I mean, it's like a finite date, like debt. Yes. And I mean, I'm as someone who, tried to manage and get out of debt my entire life. I mean, it's just something you deal with. There's different ways you can allocate your plans, but it doesn't really operate on a finite timeline like retirement. There will come an age, and I know, people don't want to think about it, people don't want to say it, where you physically or mentally or whatever cannot work. Like, that time will end. You can pay debt for forever.
You can pay debt with that retirement money if you don't get rid of it by then.
So I definitely think that there's a priority and sensitivity that needs to be given to retirement funding and wealth investment.
I'm glad you said that. When I was home, I was talking to my mom. Don't worry, this isn't a long story. And, I remember that she had some credit cards and things that had lingered over time. She was paying the minimum. I'm like, Mom, pay more. And, I was talking to her. We hadn't talked about this stuff in probably, it felt like a couple of years. And she has all the cards paid off. My mom, she's 68. Going on 69, Lord willing, love my mama. And, she told me her credit score was like 830 or something like that. And, when I think about years back, it wasn't that high. And so I just mentioned that because it's kind of joking, but kind of serious at the same time, where it's like, it might have taken her a long time to pay some of that stuff off, but now she's in like the ideal place.
Yeah.
Her credit score is higher than mine. She's doing way better than I am off of less money on a monthly basis. I'm sure she wouldn't mind me saying that. That's a pretty clean statement without disclosing too much.
Well, I think that also goes back into breaking out the good debt versus bad debt we talked about in the earlier episode. That's an important part of the conversation as well. I think probably millennials, but maybe people in general are really like, I just got to be at zero. I got to be zero. All debt needs to be at zero. And I mean, yeah, maybe that's ideal, but I don't know how functional that is. Maybe credit card debt, yes. High interest debt, yes. Please, God, I hope you haven't gotten one of those payday loans. But yes, that should definitely be it.
Yeah, nah, chill, don't do that.
But I think from there, it becomes a more sensitive conversation or more delicate conversation. So let me give the example of, people talk about school debt. And I'm one of the people who do follow the camp that I think school is too expensive. I will open with that. So whatever bias that is, I'll open with that and that. But that being said, the benefit of all that money that you paid for school, in theory, is a lifetime return.
Mm.
So I look at it like when I or someone traditionally buys something on a credit card, I'm not going to speak to y'all. I'm really getting a 24-hour return. So, yeah, I need to pay that off as soon as possible because I'm usually not buying something that's going to appreciate in value. Butter,
usually.
I'm usually doing something I have no, like as someone there, I think is BK University that we follow, and he has some funny tweets, but using a credit card is basically saying, hey, I want to buy this thing and pay more than it's worth. That's what it boils down to.
That kind of puts it in perspective.
I want to buy this and pay interest on it. Mm-hmm. And most of those decisions err towards not being Yeah, they're poor. They're poor decisions.
That and just so, made me feel really irresponsible about some past transactions.
I did some this past Sunday, for being honest, or Saturday. Now that it is, they will haunt me Sunday. They seem like good decisions on Saturday. But I mean, that's the point. Like those, yes, we should try to dispose of as quickly as possible. But, you know, loans, school, home, mortgage, things that in theory could accumulate in value. I know there's some people that fall into the camp of a home is just a really expensive savings account. Yeah, I get that. But still, I think that's a better investment than what you could buy, intend to buy with our credit cards, which usually 90% of the time we're living outside of our means by definition. We are purchasing something that we can't afford with the cash or income that we bring into the home. And someone said this to me recently, and I'll probably develop a budgeting tool around this. I'm kind of working through it in my head. They look at it as income and outcome. And I was like, yeah, I never really heard it put that simple. And that's what your budget is. It's things coming in and things going out. And and it said to better understand your outcome. Most people don't understand their outcome. Most people barely understand their income.
Yeah, I've gotten in the last few months, I guess, special thanks to doing this show in particular, like I've gotten a lot better about paying attention to that. And the app and the Digit app definitely helps with that, too. Like I get a text every day that says yesterday your balance was this, today it's this. And it's actually helped me think to myself like, oh, like I am doing way too much in this time period. Like I'm way ahead of my schedule with my outcomes.
Yeah, the psychology behind spending money is insane. And it's even more insane when you should know better, which I guess on maybe a really base level, we all should, but I really have no excuse. I mean, I have less of an excuse than the average person in that I was literally at zero at one point. And there's people that are going to be the way I never had any. I don't own a credit card now. And, you know, I'll come in and it's not a competition. This isn't the Dead Olympics or anything like that. But for me to have gone through that exercise, painful exercise, and still make some of the choices I make to this day baffle me. They baffle me while I'm actively doing it. I am literally watching my hand move the credit card towards. So I'm like, man, look, bro, you know you don't even do that. Man, slow it down. I'm like, really? That's what we doing? That's what we doing with our lives?
Yeah, I can see the little whim on your shoulder. Like it's too like there's the red one with the horns and the other one like, come on, bro. Or the other one who's in like, I guess, like a sleek suit or something.
It's only money.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess we answered multiple questions and that turned into a little bit of a mini episode in itself beyond the Q&A.
It'd be that way sometimes.
It happens sometimes. So we want to thank you all for listening to this Q&A episode of Paychecks and Balances. If you've enjoyed the show, don't forget get to hit us with a 5-star review on iTunes and subscribe to the podcast there, even if you don't listen on that platform, because the more people we reach, the more people we help.
Also want to shout out Facebook because I feel like we haven't done that in a while, but we are on Facebook.com, Paychecks and Balances. But for those of you who are on Twitter, the link to the easiest tweet ever is paychecksandbalances.com/tweet.
All you got to do is type that in. It'll come up to your Twitter account. The tweet already populated. You hit send. You've helped us be great, which means you've helped someone else be great. It's that simple. Do it. Do it. Do it. What you're waiting for. I think I was listening to T.I. earlier. I guess that's
kind of went off the rails there, but I'm
yeah,
that,
yeah. Anyway, all right. Until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.
Bye.